I was an aspiring filmmaker. I left university. I went to the University of Manchester, graduated with a degree in English literature and drama. I come from a very medical family. My dad is a doctor, my big sister is a doctor, my mum is a midwife. She's since become a yoga teacher, but she's a midwife. And all I was ever interested in was stories, you know, writing poems and plays and films. And so I left university and I was trying to carve out a career in storytelling. I'd spent 3 years at that and really was busy all the time, was trying so hard to build something and to prove myself. And suddenly there was a global pandemic, and actually the creatives, as I'm sure you remember, were classified as non-essential workers, and we were all told to stay in our houses. And it was such a strange time, and all I could hear was people saying, I can't wait for things to go back to normal. That's what everyone was saying. Can't wait for things to go back to normal. And I was thinking, you know, what an anti-hopeful sentiment, you know, because what is normal?
What is normal?
What was 2019? You know, in 2019, there were all these things that were not as they could be. I wanted to present the world was the way it was. There were things that were wonderful. You know, as you said, it was a world of waste and wonder.
Yeah.
You know, every day we're told we're overfishing. You know, we're pouring poison into our bodies. We're unkind to each other. We're starting wars. There's whole cities that are plunging into poverty and homelessness. You've got all of this. And now that there's a pandemic, in order to wish that away, you would take all of these things back. You know, we just want to go back to normal. Instead of thinking, okay, is this a moment where we can take stock, pause, reflect, think about... Well, I've always liked stories. And the much more hopeful story was, things are the way they are. Now they've gotten worse. And what comes next could be... What we could emerge into could be even better than the world we left behind.
Welcome to The Wellness Way. I'd like to introduce you to our sponsor, Vivo Barefoot. Did you know the human foot is an evolutionary masterpiece? 26 bones for natural stability, over 100 muscles, tendons and ligaments for natural strength. Embrace your human nature and reconnect to the natural world. We know about Big Pharma, we know about big farming, but did you know about Big Shoe, who put fashion before fitness and wealth before well-being? The unnatural solutions that we have created are not working. There is a better way to live. It's time to stand together, barefoot on one earth, roaring in the face of normality and embracing our human nature. We are nature. Nature is us. Get 15% off your first Vivo Barefoot order using the code PJL15. If you'd like to know more about this, please go and check out my podcast episode with seventh generation cobbler, Galahad Clark, CEO of Vivo Barefoot. Thank you, Vivo Barefoot. Enjoy the rest of the show. Hello, lovely people, and welcome to another episode of The Wellness Way. All words have meanings, and they're incredibly important, and they stick and they manifest and they absorb into our subconscious mind and our subconscious brain. And so today I'm going to bring on a guest that I'm hugely excited about, I'm not going to lie, because I was sent one of his poems back in 2020, The Great Realization. Have you guessed who I've got on the show yet? I've got Tom Foolery, one poet extraordinaire, who I love his work. I just love your work, Tom. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me. That was a very nice introduction.
Oh, well, you're worth it. Right. Before we start talking about poetry and words, I'd like to know a little bit about you, because I know so little of you. I watch you every week on my phone, and I know... I think I know some of your beliefs on causes that you're passionate about. You describe yourself as a poet, a filmmaker, and a fool. And I'd say there is nothing foolish about you. So, but you've taken the name Tom Foolery. So where did this come from?
Well, when I was beginning the channel, I've always admired people who perform under a name or a character they build for themselves. When I was little, I was a big fan of Prince and David Bowie and, you know, these people that kind of build a character as a means for expressing their thoughts and feelings and ideas. And so I was looking for a name. This is a long time ago. This is when I was at university, so about 10 years ago. I was looking for something that was one word, had the word Tom in it. And I was saying to you just before we started, something my English teacher said to me when I was at school that I never forgot. We were studying King Lear, and I remember her saying, in a society that's going off the rails, the only person that can tell the king the truth without being beheaded is the fool. And I loved that. That really, really stuck with me.
Yeah.
And tomfoolery
was born.
Began. Yeah.
And I'm very, very glad you were. I'd like to thank today's sponsors of the Wellness Way podcast, London Nootropics. London Nootropics adaptogenic coffee blends are designed to help you stay balanced and elevate your day. They give you all the benefits of regular coffee, but they minimize the side effects such as the jitters, anxiety, and that well-known crash. Lovingly made with the highest quality medicinal mushroom extracts and other adaptogens. Each blend is designed for a specific purpose. Flow for mental clarity and focus, Zen to alleviate stress and anxiety, and Mojo for that natural boost. You can read more about their blends and the adaptogens they contain on their website, londonnootropics.com. And if you'd like to learn more about their blends and their astonishing journey, why don't you go and check out our podcast episode together, where you can learn more about the boys from London Nootropics. And don't forget to use my exclusive discount, Philly20, for your 20% off. Cheers, London Nootropics. Enjoy the rest of the show. I want to start with that first poem, because it was quite remarkable in a world that felt like it had gone insane. All of a sudden, I was sent this poem that gave a voice of reason. And we're just going to play it for you now.
Tell me the one about the virus again, then I'll go to bed.
But my boy, you're growing weary, sleepy thoughts about your head.
Please, that one's my favourite. I promise just once more.
Okay, snuggle down, my boy, though I know you know full well. The story starts before then, in a world I once would dwell. It was a world of waste and wonder, of poverty and plenty, back before we understood why hindsight's 2020. You see, the people came up with companies to trade across all lands, but they swelled and got much bigger than we ever could have planned. We'd always had our wants, but now it got so quick, you could have anything you dreamed of in a day, and with a click. We noticed families had stopped talking. That's not to say they never spoke, but the meaning must have melted and the work-life balance broke. And the children's eyes grew squarer, and every toddler had a phone. They filtered out the imperfections, but amidst the noise, they felt alone. And every day the skies grew thicker, till you couldn't see the stars. So we flew in planes to find them, while down below, we filled our cars. We'd drive around all day in circles. We'd forgotten how to run. We swapped the grass for tarmac, shrunk the parks till there were none. We filled the sea with plastic, because our waste was never capped. Until each day when you went fishing, you'd pull them out, already wrapped. And while we drank and smoked and gambled, our leaders taught us why. It's best to not upset the lobbies. More convenient. Die. But then in 2020, a new virus came our way. The governments reacted and told us all to hide away. But while we all were hidden, amidst the fear and all the while, the people dusted off their instincts. They remembered how to smile. They started clapping to say thank you and calling up their mums. And while the car keys gathered dust, they would look forward to their runs. And with the skies less full of voyagers, the earth began to breathe, and the beaches bore new wildlife that scuttled off into the seas. Some people started dancing, some were singing, some were baking, We'd grown so used to bad news, but some good news was in the making. And so when we found the cure and were allowed to go outside, we all preferred the world we found to the one we'd left behind. Old habits became extinct, and they made way for the new. And every simple act of kindness was now given its due.
But why did it take a virus to bring the people back together?
Well, sometimes you've got to get sick, my boy, before you start feeling better. Now lie down and dream of tomorrow and all the things that we can do. And who knows, if you dream hard enough, maybe some of them will come true. We now call it the Great Realization. And yes, since then there have been many. But that's the story of how it started and why hindsight's 2020.
It is a beautiful poem, and hindsight's 2020. What were your feelings in 2020? You know, when you wrote that, it was a world of waste and wonder, and you know, a lot of your poems will talk about the plastic in the ocean. We'll come to that later. But it was a moment that the world paused. How did you feel when 2020 happened?
To give you some context, I was an aspiring filmmaker. I left university. I went to the University of Manchester. I graduated with a degree in English literature and drama. I come from a very medical family. My dad is a doctor. My big sister is a doctor. My mum is a midwife. She's since become a yoga teacher, but she's a midwife. My stepmum works in health insurance. And all I was ever interested in was stories, you know, writing poems and plays and films. And so I left university and I was trying to carve out a career in storytelling. And I'd spent 3 years at that and really was busy all the time, was trying so hard to build something and to prove myself. And suddenly everything we'd built, we'd started this company, we'd made this feature film. We thought this was going to be our ticket into adulthood, into the world of work. It all got whipped away in a moment. There was a global pandemic, and actually, you know, the creatives, as I'm sure you remember, were classified as non-essential workers, and we were all told to stay in our houses. And it was such a strange time. And I had been living with my friends. Suddenly I had to move back home. I've always been a very independent person. So the idea of having to move back home, I have a 6-year-old they're 10 now, but I had a 6-year-old brother and sister who I was in charge of homeschooling, because the rest of my family were working in the hospitals and they were super, super busy. And it was really strange, because I remember just being so thoughtful about everything, thinking, you know, what am I supposed to make of this time? And the real thing that inspired that poem that you just played was, all I could hear was people saying, I can't wait for things to go back to normal. That's what everyone was saying. Can't wait for things to go back to normal. And I was thinking, you know, what an anti-hopeful sentiment, you know, because what is normal?
What is normal?
What was 2019? You know, in 2019, there were all these things that were not as they could be. You know, I tried to set this up in the poem. It kind of, this thought of going back to normal built the structure for that poem, because I wanted to present the world was the way it was. There were things that were wonderful. You know, as you said, it was a world of waste and wonder.
Yeah.
You know, every day we're told we're overfishing. You know, we're pouring poison into our bodies. We're unkind to each other. We're starting wars. There's whole cities that are plunging into poverty and homelessness. You've got all of this. And now that there's a pandemic, in order to wish that away, you would take all of these things back. You know, we just want to go back to normal, instead of thinking, okay, is this a moment where we can take stock, pause, reflect, think about, you know, did we have habits or routines that were just impossible to get out of, and now we have a moment to think. And I was thinking, well, I've always liked stories, and the much more hopeful story was things are the way they are. Now they've gotten worse, and what comes next could be, what we could emerge into could be even better than the world we left behind. And it's a very hopeful thought. I've been accused many times of being a bit of a Pollyanna in that idea, but that's what inspired that one.
Sorry to interrupt this podcast. The Wellness Way has got a brand new interactive ebook out. I've created a beginner's guide to your natural health systems to help you navigate through the jungle of natural health. A banquet of knowledge wrapped up in a simple ebook, featuring some of my top guests from the podcast. As an added bonus, I've even thrown in my meditation album, The Wellness Awakening, From Past Lives to Passing. Head over to my webpage, phillyjlay.com, to grab your copy now. And while you're there, why don't you sign up for my newsletter? And don't forget to like, subscribe, and share this podcast so we can continue to get this information out. Remember, the doctor of your future is you. You say there that, you know, we would emerge into this better world. And sadly, I don't think we have. I think the world has got into even more of a state. But I will just say for me, and I know that I was incredibly privileged in my lockdown, and I was living on my own, but my children were coming out every other week to spend a week with me. And we did things, you know, I did things with an 18 and 20 year old daughters that I never would have had a chance to have done had it not been for that lockdown, you know, going out on those 5K walks in nature, going out and building a bonfire, spending that quality time, being present, you know, spending that quality time with people. You talk in the poem about, you know, people phoning their mums and dads. And, you know, this was a time that I think a lot of people did reconnect and a lot of people fractured over their beliefs on it. It was, you know, a divisive time. And I know that there will have been many people that had appalling, appalling experiences in lockdown, you know, especially, you know, children of abuse and things like that will have had a rough time. But we haven't actually emerged to a better world, I don't think, you know. And since the pandemic ended, well, one could almost say the pandemic ended with the Ukraine war. I remember people saying to me, sorry, where's the pandemic just gone? It was brought to a harsh end with the Ukraine war, and we now see what's going on in Israel and Gaza. And it reminds me very much of the poem that you did at the Royal Albert Hall, which you wrote for the British Legion, didn't you?
Yeah.
And we're just going to play that poem because I think that's another beautiful piece of work. And I would say to any of you, if you don't follow Tomfoolery, where have you been? Go and do it, because this man is amazing. But I'm just going to bring up this poem as well, and then we'll talk a little bit more about where the world has gone.
To mark the anniversary of the poppy, the British Legion has commissioned this rather special poem by Thomas Roberts.
In the belly of this building, steeped in history so great, we meet together to remember, to pay respect and contemplate. And on each chest there grows a poppy with petals red and leaf of green, a symbol echoing a sacrifice, a memory guarding what it means. Hardly more than 100 years ago came a call impossible to ignore. A global conflict was emerging, and two, the rumblings of war. So many young and brave and hopeful fought for a world that they would never know. And fields once green, now stained by bloodshed, became a place where poppies grow. There was a soldier who was also a poet named Flanders Fields, 1915, and he penned a poem rich and haunting about the poppies he had seen. And through the symbol of that flower, those who survived could dare to hope. and would commemorate the fallen now through the stories that they spoke. It was a poppy for their contribution. Since every human life is equal, a reminder that the war to end all wars must never have a sequel. But barely more than two decades later, once again, the shrapnel fell. And once again, brave souls would go to fight to face their last farewell. But they kept believing. Through the darkness, that in their time, the day would come. The day the fight that they endured would, like all things, one day be done. From then till now, we've still known conflict, and we've still known loss of life. And still so many men and women make the utmost sacrifice. But the call never goes unanswered. Anytime our values meet with threat, and in light of that, we still mark silence as we give thanks and pay respect. That's why today we wear a poppy, for battles past to modern day, and while courage guides our hearts and minds, that will never slip away. And you know what, friends assembled, sometimes I even dare to dream that 100 years from now, children will still know what it means. And on their path to peace and progress, each one of them will always know the story of the way that path was built and the ones who made it so. And so in this room, alive with poppies, with petals red and leaf of green, a symbol echoing their sacrifice, a memory guarding what it means, we share this moment of remembrance. We remember all who came before, as through remembrance we honor them and hold that hope forevermore.
It makes me cry, that poem. It was a war to end all wars, and it didn't. And then you mention in the poem, 20 years later, we went to World War II, and now we're looking at the state of the wars all over the world now. What are your thoughts on this? You know, we haven't come out of a lockdown and gone into a better world. What are your concerns for the world right now?
I think that we are a species with amnesia, because we keep going into experiences that are so clearly detestable, and we emerge on the other side of those and tell stories like John McCrae's poem 100 years ago that this one is based on, in Flanders Fields, where we write down these stories and try to bottle these emotions to convey to people that was not a good path to head down. That was not a good direction to go in. And somehow these things continue to happen again and again.
I think it's why it's so important to me that you wrote that poem, because we don't have that kind of generation now really alive. My mum was the last that wrote poetry. She'd be nearly 100, and I've got a lot of her poems that she wrote during World War II. And, you know, we had two world wars very close together, a lot of poetry out there on the emotions of war, and that's kind of gone. So for me, that was a really important piece of work that you did to bring that back.
Thank you.
I think it's a poem that everybody should be listening to every Remembrance Sunday. I'm going to say something now. I used to go to Remembrance Sunday services, and I took my children every single year, all of my life. My dad was a pilot in World War II, and I didn't go last year. And there was nothing in me that could bring myself to stand at the cenotaph. And it's not that I don't have gratitude for my dad, but it's because nothing's been learned. And that upset me so greatly. And I always put his RAF jacket on to go to the services, but instead I wore it on the Saturday, which was the 11th of the 11th. And I went on the demonstration for Palestine. And I felt very strongly, and a lot of people gave us a lot of flack for that demonstration and said, you know, it's, you know, Day of Remembrance, you should not be, it's Armistice Day, what are you doing on the streets? And it's like, I'm sorry, they fought for an armistice. And we haven't done that. We haven't acknowledged the armistice. What are your thoughts? Do you mind sharing your thoughts on what's happening with this conflict in the Middle East?
The last place that I was outside of the UK before the global pandemic was Palestine. Two of my best friends grew up in Jerusalem. And in December of 2019, I flew into Tel Aviv and went to Jerusalem, and my friends took me to the West Bank. I didn't go to Gaza. And I was hosted by some really, really, really kind people. And it was a really beautiful place and a really beautiful time, and the hospitality was incredible, the food was incredible, the culture was incredible, and it's really difficult. I'm so uncertain as to how best to speak about what's going on, because I feel like I feel like from all I read and all I hear from the people that I trust, that I care about, that it's an incredibly one-sided conflict, if you can even call it that, that's being waged in that area. And it's, you know, you see people who speak up, you know, on behalf of the Palestinians called anti-Semitic. And, you know, I've really good Jewish friends as well, and I think it's really difficult, because I think to criticize the policies of the Israeli government and what they're doing in Gaza does not, you know, mean in any way that, you know, you're against this group of people. It's to say what we can see, the videos that are emerging, what's happening since the 7th of October, and actually, quite frankly,
Way before then.
You know, because when I was there, when I was in the West Bank, I could see these settlements being built. You know, these friends. I'm embarrassed to say that I was terribly uneducated on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict throughout my education in the British schooling system. You know, we didn't know anything.
Well, you would be.
They don't talk about it at all.
It
wasn't until I started to make friends with people from that part of the world that I started to learn much too slowly what was going on, and they'd show me documentaries and they'd tell me stories. And then now this is happening, and, you know, everyone's talking about it, and I'm trying my best to be sensitive and to be thoughtful, but it's terrible. It's terrible. And I
don't understand how we kind of let this happen, really. I just don't understand it. And I'm not anti-Semitic. My two children are half Jewish. I've spent a lot of time in Israel, and I've gone to the West Bank. I did midnight mass once in Bethlehem. That was a remarkable moment in 2023. I don't know if you saw it, but they chose not to hold the midnight mass.
I didn't see that.
And instead, they built a manger of bombed buildings and dead bodies and dead animals to depict Jesus and the manger. And it was quite extraordinary and rung very hard into my heart. And I'm just like, wow, it kind of says it all. And it is a conflict that's gone on for many years. And I don't understand why it's allowed to happen. It is a genocide. It's not a conflict in my mind.
I think that it's completely indefensible what's happening. And I think that if our government, which they are not doing everything in their power to stop what's happening in that part of the world right now, then I think they become complicit in those indefensible actions. And I think that history is not going to look kindly on the governments that keep this going. It's impossible,
just,
isn't it?
It is. I mean, we're not just complicit. You know, we've just bombed Yemen, you know, and the Houthi were, I think, you know, justifiably targeting ships that were taking arms and things to Israel. And for some reason, our prime minister didn't even go to government. He literally just let the bombs loose. And it's just like, you don't have a mandate to rule anyway. Nobody actually voted for you as prime minister. And then you decide to bomb the Yemen. We're not complicit. We're part of this war. And we've just had the case, the trial in South Africa has brought against Israel. And it says it's a genocide and it has to stop. And Netanyahu has no intentions of letting it stop. We should be liable then, because we're allowing this to happen, us and the Americans. And I do feel quite strongly about that, really. It's a really sad world that we've come to. And that hope from 2020 and your poem from 2020, to have come to this in such a short period of time, is just indefensible, like you said. And I don't understand where it's going to go or how it's going to get resolved. And that worries me. It worries me for our children and for the planet. I'm going to talk to you about the planet, because I know that is another thing you're very, very passionate about.
Well, it's overwhelming how many things there are to be concerned about. It really is. And what's difficult is, you know, it's hard to know where to focus your attention and what problems to focus your attention on, because, you know, we've all got the things, the immediate things that are going on in our own little lives that we're trying to navigate to keep our heads above water and keep running.
We're all like little ducks,
like little ducks, keep running on that treadmill. Meanwhile, you know, there's what's going on this is what I found when I, in 2020, two or three, I was doing a poem every single day of 2022. I released a small poem every day of the year on my Instagram channels. And it was while I was doing that I found, you know, that there are the things that everyone is talking about that are terrible and scary and indefensible. At that time, it was mainly what was going on in Ukraine. Right now, it's what's happening in Gaza. And then there's also the cobalt mines of the DRC. There's the starvation campaigns in Yemen. There's this over here. There's this over here. And because I was releasing a poem every day, looking at a different topic each day, people would send me, you know, there was the Mahsa Amini sort of revolution that took place in Iran, and I suddenly realized, you know, it's too much, and I don't know what the repercussions of this are going to be for even people's mental health, you know, because every day you turn on the news and are just terrified, you know.
There's a great painting that I saw in a restaurant in London called The Pharmacy, that I think they had commissioned in 2020, and it just says, "Don't feed the fear," which for a restaurant, you can't have a better painting than that. but it is, you know, I get sent a lot of stuff as well, for the podcast and for, you know, the social media posts I do. It is overwhelming, but I was overwhelmed when I was a child. I remember back in the late 60s, early 70s, being terrified that we had climate freezing, we were told the world was getting cold. And it was like, oh my God, we're all going to die and we're going to be really, really cold. And then I remember acid rain, being desperately upset when I learned about acid rain. And all of these things going on and on. You brought up the cobalt mines there. And everybody at the moment saying, you know, we need to go electric and we need electric cars and we need... Do people have any concept of what this actually means for the planet? We've got no infrastructure in place to go electric on everything. And we look at wind turbines that don't really work and kill an awful lot of birds. And it's really hard to see the wood for the trees anymore, isn't it?
Yeah, and not only... I can't speak for people, but I don't... This is why I'm so comfortable calling myself a fool, because I actually don't know anything. You know, I don't think any of us do. I try and read as much as I can. The words of great thinkers from the past and great thinkers of the present, I try and spend as much time as I'm able trying to sort out my own thoughts and to figure out what I think. But, you know, we're living in an age of experts, and everyone is walking around professing their own wisdom. And I'm actually so much more trusting of people that present themselves as similar to me, trying to figure out what's going on. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what the solution is. You know, I have my own little moral and ethical ideas about what I think is good and what I think is bad and what I'd like, you know, what am I partaking in when I feel like I'm well orientated in the world and when I'm not. And some of these questions that you're asking me are, you know,
I'm being a bit deep, but I
would hate for, you know, a Welsh poet who, you know, wasn't the best in his class at school, who was obsessed with storytelling, who in the pandemic told a story that doesn't seem to be necessarily playing out in the most hopeful of ways and got a lot of attention, would, you know, come here and pretend to be an expert about anything. You know, I'm so hopeful that people can choose to do good and be good. That's a lovely thought. And I'm trying as best I can to contribute positively, but all the time I'm a hypocrite. Like, all the time.
In what way?
Well, you know, like, I you know, even when I came in to your lovely house today, I thought...
I brought a
non-reusable coffee cup with me, you know, because this morning, like, on the way here, I was feeling groggy and I thought, oh, let me get a coffee, you know, and then this is the same person that writes poetry about how, you know, terrible single-use plastic is. And it's so hard in the modern world not to be a hypocrite.
The thing is, there are solutions to all of this. Mm. And, you know, there are mushrooms that can eat plastic. There are ways of producing energy using our waste products. Mm. But the governments of the world don't seem to want to do this. You know, there's a mushroom, and I remember this being on the news from a science lab, not far down the road actually, Didcot, with the scientist that had discovered a mushroom that could eat oil spills in the sea.
Get more of them.
This is like
the ocean,
20 years ago. But no one's doing it. Why are they not doing it?
Oh, you're asking the wrong person. But I try not to feel completely, you know, for every monologue of despair, you could also conjure up a monologue of reasons to be hopeful,
cheerful.
You know.
Part three, Ian Jury.
Do you know what
I
mean?
Do you know that song?
I mean,
reasons to be cheerful, part three.
Reasons to be cheerful. And it's important sometimes to try and think about what those might be. You know, we look outside and the cars aren't on fire where we are right now. You know, we have the ability to stay warm and to access food and you know, until 2022, you know, there hadn't been a war in Europe, I think, for 70 years. That hadn't been the case for a very, very long time. Every day, you know, for every article you read about the energy crisis, I think I got very excited about, was it the nuclear fusion thing that was taking place, and then someone tells me that that's bad and someone tells me that's good, and I don't know anything, but if these mushrooms can eat all the oil, then let's try that.
I've got loads of podcasts up on mushrooms. I love mushrooms.
Magic mushrooms?
Oh yeah, I did my first
did you?
My first retreat on them quite recently, but I haven't done a podcast on that yet, but I'm
okay, it's coming.
But I will do.
Don't want to tease
because
that out
it, it was it was extraordinary, like nothing on earth. I can't tell you.
Liberty caps.
I don't know what they were.
Oh, okay.
I've no idea what I took, but it was quite remarkable. And I just kept seeing mushrooms everywhere in the world. But that's a whole nother story.
That's coming
another
soon.
Podcast. But I'm gonna come back to something you said a little bit earlier there about people having kindness and, you know, people's ability and good. And I want to bring another one of your poems to everybody's attention now, which I think is quite extraordinary. So let's just play this one.
Rise and shine, small friend of mine. I hope you slept all right. The sun will soon flood through this room as day takes over night.
Go away, please, not today. I'm not going to get up. I'm staying here, just leave me be and keep the curtains shut.
You don't mean that. The day awaits, it's time to shake a leg. The world is waiting just for you, so we need you out of bed.
Why do you always exaggerate? The world doesn't wait for me. The world wouldn't notice if I slept all day. Please just leave me be.
And watch you waste all that potential. That would be a sorry scene.
What's this potential you're obsessed with? What does potential even mean?
Okay. I'm gonna tell you a secret now, but once I tell you, that is that. You'll never see things the same again, and I cannot take it back. In our core is a plus and a minus, and they're eternally at play. They give us the power to add goodness to the world or to take some good away. Every day, you plus and minus with everything you say and do. It's the difference between a careless lie and the words we know are true. You see, the global goodness number is such a delicate amount, and that trusted total tally takes us all into account. Whenever enough of us are plussing, the global goodness is increased, though still the minus lurks inside us as a menace to the peace. A little look through human history tells us all we need to know. It's no surprise the toughest times were when that number got too low.
But I'm so small and insignificant compared to all the universe. Why can't I just stay home in bed? At least I wouldn't make things worse.
Because you have in you potential. It's all the pluses you could add. It's the amount of good you're capable of, and it surpasses all things bad. Only you will ever know how much that is in any given day, but if you don't contribute what you could, that potential fades away. If that's the case, the global goodness slips into decline when one as wonderful as you forgets the value of your time. All the things that make life special, all the colours, sounds and tastes, they just lose a touch of magic when your goodness goes to waste. However, thankfully, for all our sakes, the reverse is also true. Here's what happens if you even try to do the best that you can do. Imagine, while we're out today, and we dodge the pavement cracks, we spy a beetle belly up and help him off his back. Would you still believe it wasn't worth it? Or that nobody would care that you added a touch of goodness to the world by being there?
But that's such a tiny thing to do. Would you really get a plus for that?
My friend, you can plant a tree or make your bed or even pet a cat, a word of warmth to someone struggling, or give your grandparents a call. A smile amidst a sea of frowns could mean the difference to us all. And though these pluses can't be seen, I can assure you that they're real. You'll never doubt it's working just from the way it makes you feel. A And even when life leaves us weary, somehow we'll find the strength we need, and that global goodness grows with each good word and each good deed. Imagine if we spent a lifetime plussing. You just can't fathom it, my friend. It might just make our lives magnificent. Although we won't know till the end. Come on, get up now and join me, and let's just do the best we can. We'll think of ways we can contribute. We'll start today and make a plan. And look, if you stumble or fall short sometimes, try not to panic. Think instead how the whole world got a little bit better the moment you surfaced from your bed.
And that global goodness grows with each good word and each good deed. You must be so proud of that poem. I think it is actually one of the most beautiful poems that you wrote or have written so far. I love it. The pluses and the minuses, the potential in all of us. And, you know, the graphics on that with the energy and everything is energy. I got to ask you, do you believe in the universe? God?
Do I believe in the universe?
Yeah.
I've gone through phases in my life. My dad is an atheist. My mum raised me as a Christian. I was taken to church until I was about 11. I went to a Church of England school. Then I had a period of about 10 years, I'd say, where I became more interested in what my dad believed in that kind of atheism, and I turned away from religion for, I'd say, until the middle of my 20s, and now I don't know what I believe, but I've got a lot more. I don't like the flippancy that some atheists have, that almost feeling of human arrogance of, you know, thinking that we've got it all figured out. I really don't think we do. I think that the biblical stories or religious stories from whatever religion you follow, these are stories that are thousands of years old and have so much ancient wisdom in them.
Yep.
That to throw them out because they don't feel, you know, people debate whether they're tangibly true or not. And I'm like, do you do that with every story you read? Think about whether it's true or whether it's trying to tell you something, you know, whether it's
the parables,
like it would be, in my opinion, it would be exactly the same to say there is no value to the Harry Potter books because it's not true. It's like, well, no, you know, it's teaching children something about friendship and telling the truth and being brave and good and evil, you know? And so it doesn't matter whether it's true or not. And I think that, you know, these books are the accumulative wisdom of generations. And so to discount them is really, in my opinion, foolhardy. And in terms of spirituality, I'm still trying to figure out what I believe, but I'm much more open than I've ever been in my life.
I'll tell you what, the reason I ask that actually is because you use the plus and the minus analogy in that poem. And, you know, that's energy, that's our yin and yang. And we have the ripple effect where when we do something good, and you say right at the beginning of that poem, you know, whether you're just turning a beetle over on its back or, you know, whatever you're doing. And we all have this potential to do something nice. And, you know, I know you've got another poem out on homelessness, you know, walking past a homeless man.
The Invisible Man.
Yeah. The Invisible Man. That's right.
That was a true story. I was with my little sister in central London, and I was just being busy and concerned with where we were going, and this was years ago. I can't remember if it was Kai or Sora. I was out with both of them. It was either my little sister or my little brother asked me, why can nobody see that man? And
so profound.
And I turned and I looked at this guy who was asking everyone walking past for change, and no one was looking at him. And from her 6-year-old point of view, the only explanation would be that they couldn't see him, you know, that he was in some way invisible. And years later, I wrote it as a poem. But sorry, I interrupted you.
But
what were you saying?
No, I love that, and the fact that you admit in the poem that it's something that did happen, and it, you know, we all walk past. Well, we've all been guilty of that. I'm going to tell a story now because it was the moment that I was most proud of my eldest daughter in her whole life. And it was Christmas Day, and it was the first Christmas Day that Danny and I had separated, but we were going as a family to some dear friends of ours. And we were driving out to Essex, and Danny stopped at a petrol station because he wanted to get a drink in a throwaway cup, but he wanted a coffee to keep driving. And my daughter leaned over to the front and said, "Have you got a fiver on you, Mum?" And I said, "Why?" I said, "If you want something, sweetheart, go in the shop and Daddy will buy it." And she said, "No, I want a fiver, please, Mum. Have you got a fiver?" And I kind of, opened my bag, had a fiver, gave it to her, and she got out the car. And she had noticed a homeless man sitting outside the petrol station with a cup on Christmas Day, Christmas morning. And she went over and she put that fiver in. And the ripple effect happened. And every single car in the petrol station opened its doors and everybody got out and gave money to that man. And he had enough to go and get a hotel room for the night because one child had asked for a fiver. And I just, the potential of mankind to do just tiny little actions become great, you know, and that's why I love that poem so much. I think it is a truly great poem.
Thank you.
So I hope you don't mind me sharing that.
It's
one of those proud mother moments.
Yeah.
There.
Thank you for saying that. I had a friend during the pandemic, a really good friend who had a really tough time. And really isolated themselves and became quite, I would say, hopeless and fearful of the future and their part in it, and you know, stopped going outside, stopped interacting with people, and stopped wanting to even get out of bed. You know, and I was thinking about him a lot when I wrote that poem. There's certain lines where the want is just to express that, as we talked about in the beginning of this podcast, there are things going on in the world that are so enormous that we can easily consume ourselves with, and we should care about, and we should know about, and we should know what our stance is, and we should know what we want to happen. But the terrifying reality is that it is possible, and I've seen it happen with people, to let those enormous global things consume us so much that we don't even want to go outside anymore. And that poem was a gentle encouragement to say, you know, it's talking about the ripple effect that you witnessed with your daughter in that petrol station, but it's also to say that, you know, if you abandon your potential and what you can do, if you refuse to get out of bed, then not only are things not going to get better, but they're that little bit worse. And so just, even if that's all you can do, and I hope you can move mountains, but if that's all you can do, then it's important that you do try and do that, you know, because for all the things that are going wrong, then, you know, it's supposed to be part of a children's, you know, it's a poem to my little brother and sister, mm-hmm. who are very young. So I use the analogy, even if there's just a beetle on his back and you just flip him over and he carries on his way, then it's that little bit better. And I hope that that's true. I hope that that's true.
I absolutely know that that's true.
Good. And that I like your certainty.
That's... tiny, weeny little thing that we do, whether it's just smiling, to somebody. I don't know what it is about me, but whenever I go for my dog walks, complete strangers come up to me and tell me their life stories of things that have gone wrong. And I've always had this, and I don't know why. And at first, I used to find it a bit upsetting. And now it's just like somebody has just relieved their stress today. And so I embrace it, and just, you know, everything that we can do, every little thing on that ripple effect makes the ocean. And it reminds me of that Anita Roddick saying, who started The Body Shop. And she said, if you think you're too small to make a difference, try going to bed with a mosquito in the room. It says it all, really, doesn't it?
Yep. 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 Mosquitoes can make a difference.
So now we're going to come on to your film. So this, you talked earlier about how you had started a film company before the pandemic.
Yeah.
But I thought The Spaceman was your first movie.
First released film.
Okay.
Yeah, I produced a film of a very good friend of mine before the pandemic. It took a very long time to make, and sadly has not yet found its release. But the Spaceman was a 2-year project that I began in 2021 with, you know, my friend Alex, who was an incredible producer, AJ, who was the writer and co-director, and effectively it's a really simple family story about a little boy who's being bullied and his mum is struggling to connect with him, struggling to get him to open up, and he doesn't want to talk about what's going on in school. He's obsessed with outer space, and when he gets home, instead of speaking to his mum about the mean kids in his class, he just wants to run up to his room and look through his telescope and imagine.
That's one of the reasons I asked you if you believed in the universe as well, actually, because, you know, it's tremendous. I mean, how far away was he talking to somebody and a dead man, you know? I mean,
well, we've left the I would love for people to watch this film. It's called The Spaceman. It's on my YouTube channel. And effectively, his one Christmas, his mum gets him this electronic transceiver device that lets him tune into the frequencies of space stations. And that night, he's trying, and the voice of the spaceman crackles through, and he forms this friendship, and he develops this trust with this cosmic confidant who he eventually opens up to about what's happening, you know, in his life. And the spaceman encourages him to speak to his mum about what's going on, and he does, and I don't want to spoil the ending for anyone who wants to watch the film. But
We're going to give you a little trailer of it now, because it is a great film, so we're just going to come over to the trailer.
Once upon a bedtime, in a place a lot like here, there lived a boy, let's call him Danny, who dreamed to one day disappear. It wasn't sticks or stones that hurt him, and though he pretended not to mind, so often words, a lot like weapons, would seek him out to be unkind. Though unlike any of his classmates, he held a cosmic kind of hope. He studied space stations and star maps each night from behind his telescope, a true explorer of the infinite. To him, it really was child's play. His knowledge spanned each constellation that shone throughout the Milky Way. So on a day that didn't matter, he trundled home with a heavy heart. This is the story of the spaceman, and it's the perfect place to start.
I really would recommend that everybody watch this film, and bullying is a problem. I was bullied at school. Were you bullied at school?
No, I was.
Don't tell me you were the bully. No, I'm joking.
No, I remember vividly getting to my secondary school, and I was shorter than everyone else in my year, and there was it was a state school in Southwest London. There was a fair bit of that going on, and I made a decision that I was going to be the funny kid, and so I immersed myself in making everybody laugh that I could, and I was able to navigate secondary school that way and avoid problems because, you know, the no one minds the funny kid. You know, well, that was my defence.
Yeah, and it's very true. And I did a very similar thing actually, and I was the clown, the class clown, yeah. But always in trouble with it to make people laugh. I used to
piss
off the teachers.
It can be disruptive. Yeah, yeah.
But everybody found it funny. But laughter is the best medicine. It is, and it's an important tool that, you know, we all have in our toolbox, and you know, it's something that we have to use a lot more of. We're coming towards the end of the podcast, but I'm going to ask you now to share. Tell me. And I know I've asked you this before and you went, I don't know. Dig deep. Mm-hmm. Out of all the poems that you've written, and there must be hundreds now, as you said, you did one a day, out of every topic that you've covered, what has been the one that is most poignant to you, most sensitive to you, that you're maybe most proud of?
Dangerous emotion, pride.
I know it is.
I have a 94-year-old grandmother who is not doing very well at the moment. She
I'm
has
sorry.
Quite severe Alzheimer's, and this is something that's been the case for about 10 years now, and it's really getting to the stage where she can't function without pretty much round the clock care. My mum and my mum's sister have been doing an excellent job of this for the most part of the last 10 years, but even they are getting to, they've been sharing care of her, and even they are getting to the point where it's getting too much. And I wrote a poem for her during the 2022, when I was writing one every day, when I was looking after her, called One Step at a Time.
I remember it well.
I like that one. Mm. I like that one because I try not to like any of my own poems because it's a...
ego.
It's an ego thing, and it's a thought and it's a feeling that I have in that moment, and I try as best I can to turn that thought and that feeling into a collection of words and to say them and mean them, record them, release them, and then forget all about them and try it again and try to do it better the next time. With that one, it resonated with my mum, as you'd imagine, yeah, because it was about her mum.
Yeah.
And she has it printed and on the wall in her cottage. And so I would say I see it very frequently whenever I go to visit my mum. I see that one on the wall, and I don't know if pride is the right word, but I feel pleased that the thought that I had that got turned into some words has brought some comfort to my mum in a difficult experience that she's dealing with.
That's beautiful.
My grandma.
I love that. That's really, really beautiful. My mum had one set of words which she had on her fridge door, and that was just, I'm spending my children's inheritance. So the fact that your mum's got that, it just is beautiful. And I didn't mean to trivialise what your mum has gone through, but it's lovely when your parents, you know, use words and appreciate words.
Yeah.
And that is absolutely beautiful. I want to take you right back to the beginning to close. When you were at school in Southwest London, you didn't wake up one morning and go, I want to be a poet, did you? Or did you?
No.
No.
No. No, I was completely comfortable with this never being my job, because I could do it anyway. You know, It's really strange. You would never have heard me say, if you'd known me when I was growing up, I want to be a poet, because I didn't know it was something you could be.
A thing.
I didn't know it was a thing.
A job.
I didn't know it could be a job. I began doing it because I've always been interested in words. As I told you, I tried to be quick-witted in school to avoid, you know, having conflict with people. And over a long course of time, I became really interested in people that were good with words, particularly people that were good at turning their thoughts and feelings and experience into a condensed, you know, package almost of words, which is what a poem is.
And it's a great way of putting it. I've never thought of it like that. It is a condensed package of words.
Really,
isn't it?
Yeah. Really, you know, I have no idea who said this, but someone said once, it's harder to write a short letter than a long letter. And that's really true, because it's harder to express yourself with a little than a lot. If you write a long letter, you can ramble all you want. But if you want to be succinct, that takes time and effort. And these attempts, every time I write a poem, they're just attempts to take a confusing idea that I have or a confusing feeling that I'm grappling with and to express it in as artistic or thoughtful or candid a way as I possibly can. And as far as I'm concerned, there's no finished, you know, that's a lifelong pursuit. You know, I'm more competent with that now than I was 10 years ago, and I hope to be even more competent with it 10 years from now. Right now I'm in a very strange phase of my life because of the great realization and the pandemic, where I can forge some sort of a living from doing that. But I'm also really peaceful with the thought that one day, you know, that things come and things go.
You might have to go get a proper job.
You might have to go get a proper job, and that's okay, because I'll keep doing this.
And you've done it, you know, and I think one of the inspiring things about your work, and I do find your work incredibly inspiring, is that these thoughts that are packaged concisely are out there now for the world to see for the rest of time, you know, till we're here, you know.
Till they shut off the internet.
Till they're shot off the internet.
Till the power grid collapses.
Oh, yes. But, you know, even when that happens... Mm. We'll go back to the native tribes. When I say even when that happens, I bloody hope it doesn't happen. But if that ever happened, we will go back to the ancient times where the tribal people of the world, the fathers of Mother Nature, mothers of Mother Nature, will sit round a fire and they will pass down stories. And I don't think it's a coincidence that a lot of the stories that we, you know, children's stories, you know, Hans Christian Andersen thing, you know, we talk about giants, we talk about dragons, and yet there seems to actually be quite a lot of evidence now that giants and dragons did exist. You know, they weren't just made up. They were, you know, there's some bones. I can't remember where I saw this article. I've seen a lot of articles on it recently about some bones that were found that are kind of like 20 foot tall. It was somewhere in the Middle East, and they just discovered this whole nation of people. So words will get passed down, and stories will get passed down, and the great realization starts with saying that, you know, back in 2020 hindsight, you know, where did it all begin? And that's where it began for you. I don't know where it's going to end, but this has been an absolute joy. Tell everybody where they can find you, your social handles, all tomfoolery. No, you're not actually, you're probably tomfoolery.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me. You've been such a lovely host. And I remember in the pandemic when you first reached out to me to tell me that you enjoyed that poem and took something from it. And you sent me this book, which... you know, which I'm sure everyone listening to this podcast knows very well, but was really, really much
appreciated. I'll say it in case they're listening, The Natural Wellness Journal.
Yes. Well, thank you. I really appreciate it. My social handles are at probably tomfoolery, and that's where I put the vast majority of the things I create.
And your webpage?
Yep. Probably tomfoolery.com.
.com. So it's .com.
Yeah.
It has been a joy to have you. Thank you so much for coming on the show. All words have meanings and they can be incredibly profound. And I've really enjoyed this episode. And any of you inspiring poets out there, I just say pick up a pen and paper And just do it. Would you agree, Tom?
Diolch yn fawr. Thank you very much. Yes, completely. The more people expressing themselves, the better.
And the more people listening, the better. Thank you. I will see you next week on another episode of The Wellness Way. I'm going to go and pick up my pen and paper now and do some writing. Tomfoolery, thank you.